JT, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm well. I'm excited. Let's get it going, Scott and Karen.
Let's start with getting cut, because most of your life, I imagine, that wasn't a thing because you're one of the star athletes or maybe the guy everything was centered around growing up. But as I said earlier, you play long enough, it happens to everybody. Do you have any stories where it was a really bad situation or a humorous situation the way you got cut?
I mean, they were all bad situations. I don't know when you guys got cut, but I got cut 7 times as a pro, and not one of them was enjoyable. I think the worst one for me was after I thought I had already made the team. And in the league, once you're a vested player and you're on that roster for the first game, your contract is guaranteed that year. Well, I made it through the weekend, made it through the first team meeting, and then Marvin Lewis pulled me aside and said, you know, we're going in a different direction. And that was probably the worst one, because I thought all weekend I was good to go, came back to when the full team was there, and got asked to leave.
Yeah, it's not easy. You're right about that. And I can imagine the first time that it happens at that level, it's a really tough one. I mean, you can look around. Everybody can do the math, JT, but it's that I'm going to overcome. I'm going to be the guy who beats the odds that gets most athletes to that level. And dealing with that at some point is probably really difficult the first time it happens.
Yeah, the first time it happened was I actually worked out all right, because they tried to make a move. I was a third string quarterback, and they needed like an extra DB or something for a weekend. And so they tried to basically release me for the weekend, they would say, and sign me back. And basically they ended up releasing me for like 6 hours. I got more money, and it worked out pretty well, because I had a couple other opportunities to go play. But it was it's never fun. It's never fun. I shouldn't even joke around about it. I still get uncomfortable during cut day, and I've been out of it for a long, long time.
JT, from one guy who wasn't cut but was traded, the big news is the fact that Sam Darnold is heading to the Carolina Panthers from the New York Jets, of course. Before we look at the Jets situation, I want to look at Carolina. They've hooked him up with Joe Brady, of course. Brady, we know, had success at LSU with Joe Burrow. How do you see that fit with Darnold and Joe Brady?
I'm excited for Sam Darnold. I don't know him personally, but I know a lot of people in and around his camp, and he's certainly, for whatever reason, didn't work out with the Jets. And I think a fresh start, he's still a very young guy. You know, I think if he was in this draft, he would be, you know, right at the top of the draft class, and it's got an opportunity to work out for both organizations. Really, you know, it's one of those things that looks good at both sides right now. I know if I was a young quarterback, I would be excited to work with a guy who has Joe Brady's track record as far as what he brings to the quarterback position. Carolina's invested in that new staff for a long time, and so it's a great opportunity in a division that, you know, historically has been really difficult. They certainly have the returning Super Bowl champions, but other than that, you know, all of a sudden potentially is a little bit more open than it has been in the past, and it's got a great opportunity for him to go in there, start fresh, and kind of remind people about why he was taken so high in the draft to begin with.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, because, I mean, he's obviously a very high draft pick. There are a lot of expectations, and maybe for a young quarterback in the spotlight of New York, it was just too much for him. But when you look at him on the field, the tools are still there.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, this is not specific to just American football, but so much of being a pro athlete at that level, especially with any expectations, is, you know, where are you? What is your organization? What does your organization look like? What is the, you know, temperature of the organization, the coaching staff? Where are they at in their landscape of their careers? Are they on the up? Are they, you know, trying to come off the cellar? All those things matter. And so when you're a quarterback, so much of your job is dependent on who's around you, you know, the play caller, all those types, the division you play in. And so when you're, it's one of those weird things about American sports, and I don't know exactly if it's the same up north, but it's where we reward the best players in a draft where you go to the worst team, you know, as opposed to like a European soccer model where you come up in a club and there's, you know, you get an opportunity to pick where you go. And so this will be hopefully a better fit for him, where he ends up and what it looks like. But I don't see anything as far as the skills diminishing. I know, you know, he certainly has not played as well as he probably would have hoped, but there's no reason to think that he's not the same prospect that he was coming out a few years ago.
JT O'Sullivan, former NFL quarterback, joining us here this morning on Rintoul and Sermon, and you can attest to this a lot more than any of us. Look, it's the toughest position to play in sports, and there is this very small number of quarterbacks on the planet who can overcome their environments on a consistent basis. Most guys, even in the toughest position in sports, They need the right OC. They need the right offense. They need the right weapons, O-line, all of that around them. As a guy who's been there, JT, what does the right fit look like in the eyes of a quarterback?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, all of those things, right? That's why it's so layered and difficult to kind of get these draft prospects and everybody to agree on, because so much of it is dependent on, you know, who you're playing with, who you're playing against, what that situation looks like on a week-to-week basis. You know, it's a perfect example is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that one of, if not the best player in the league. Well, he's also surrounded by some really good talent. You know, even Aaron Rodgers, surrounded by, you know, Davante Adams, some good talent around him. Now, Aaron Rodgers is probably one of those few players that, you know, depending, he could be anywhere and you think he'd have a really good chance to win. But across the landscape of the league, there aren't really a lot of guys like that. They're very unicornish. And so I think it definitely matters. I can tell you personally, there's a big difference being in the huddle with Calvin Johnson than being in the huddle with the guys who were on the practice squad last week and trying to win and separate and get open consistently on Sundays. And so it definitely matters, whether it's, you know, psychological or just out there trying to get open and create space and make plays. You know, guys who have done it for a long time and have proven they can do it and you can trust and depend on in an NFL huddle really matters for a quarterback.
Yeah, it certainly does. I'm not sure that in most places, with all due respect to Chad Henne and everything he's accomplished, I'm not sure that in most places he's being asked to pull the trigger on fourth down in a playoff game to win it and move on in the tournament on the road to the Super Bowl. But in Kansas City, it seems like you find the best version of whatever that quarterback is. And now other organizations are trying to find out if they can find those best fits. I'm going to give you three guys, and you tell me who you think has the best fit with his new team. Carson Wentz in Indianapolis, Matt Stafford in L.A., Jared Goff in Detroit. Who jumps out as having the best fit with his environment?
Oh, that's a tough one. Can I pick none of them? No. I would probably say Carson Wentz, just because I'm a big fan of Frank in what they do in the Indy, and I think that defense is good enough to keep them in just about any single game. And, you know, I think for whatever reason it didn't work out in Philadelphia. I don't pretend to know anything that anybody else has already talked about and digested with what went down there. Obviously didn't end the way that they all wanted. But I think anybody who turns on the film of a healthy Carson Wentz can see flashes of, you know, him right up there in the MVP conversation. So that's still there. I think Frank has a good track record with quarterbacks about being able to put them in successful situations. And now, can he do it for a season? Can he do it for half a decade? You know, time will tell. But I think if I had to pick one that I was going to invest in, it would be Indianapolis.
Looking ahead, we've got the NFL draft coming up later this month. Of course, we pretty much know who's going first. Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Clemson, but then we've got the New York Jets, who obviously they're looking for their new franchise quarterback. When you look at the best fit with that new Robert Saleh team, who do you see as a guy that would work well in New York?
I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know about great fit. I couldn't tell you who's calling plays there, who's on the staff there. I can tell you that it sure sounds like everybody thinks it's going to be Zach Wilson. Yeah. I probably am in the minority when I say that I probably have Justin Fields right there, if not a tick ahead Zach Wilson. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to do that, and it doesn't mean that the 49ers are even going to do that at the number three pick. I just think that Justin Fields has a higher ceiling, projects to be a bit more of a dynamic playmaker on Sundays. And so that's my feeling. I think Zach Wilson's got the chance to go there. And again, you know, this is one of those things where context matters when you're building an organization who has struggled recently. It's not easy to go in there for anybody and play quarterback. You could put anybody in that situation, they're going to struggle. And I think that the Zach Wilson conversation has everybody kind of, and I'm like this a little bit, where I'm like so in awe of how he throws the ball. I love his release. I love his upper body mechanics, what he can do with the ball. And it's going to be really hard to go there and be successful right out the gate. The guys that, you know, everybody loves to compare him to, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, those guys all had the luxury of sitting, of not going into a dumpster fire, of not having to be thrown into the wolves like that, of not trading, you know, the number three pick a few years before so that they can make room for you to play immediately. And so it's going to be tough right out the gate. And hopefully, you know, they're good enough to, he's good enough to overcome that kind of adversity, but it's not going to be an easy path.
You mentioned sitting and kind of learning behind a veteran quarterback. You mentioned Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith being the situation in Kansas City. San Francisco's curious to me because they do have Jimmy G, and Kyle Shanahan has said, yes, like they moved up. Obviously, they want a quarterback, but, you know, basically he said it's Jimmy G's job right now. Do you see this as a situation that could be like the Kansas City one?
Yeah, I mean, what a fascinating conversation and room. I think that he's saying everything that you have to say right now, if I'm being honest. In addition, sure, they really could believe that. They could believe that, you know, Garoppolo will rise to the occasion, elevate his game, and all of those things. I think that every team is looking for depth. But when you make that type of move, you're obviously making that type of move for someone to play. You know, it'd be one thing if they just had the third pick and they didn't make that decision. But to move up and give up what they gave up to make this pick, I think that they're all in. Really, they're all in on three players. It doesn't matter who they get there. I know it's kind of in the media, the narrative is that it's locked in and with Lawrence and Wilson going one and two. If that happens, then they obviously have three guys that they feel really good about. I personally would slot Fields there. I know everybody else thinks that it's a Mac Jones, and everything coming out of that organization sounds like it's Mac Jones, but you know, it's hard for me to get past Fields as being the third player there.
Well, it's hard for me to get past Fields being a guy who could run what Kyle Shanahan likes to do just with his athletic versatility as compared to a Mac Jones. We'll wait and see. You're absolutely right. But I watched the 49ers go subterfuge about Quinn and Williams before they drafted Nick Bosa. So I tend to lean with you that they're going Justin Fields at number three. We'll wait and see. JT O'Sullivan joining us here this morning. You know, in leading up to this draft, I had an excellent conversation with John Beck last month, and he works for the 3D Academy, and I'm sure you know who John Beck is, and the quarterback world is very small. So he's trained Zach Wilson. He's worked with Trey Lance, Kyle Trask, some of these top quarterbacks heading into the draft this year. It's a lot different process when John was coming out of college and when you were coming out of college as to the specific coaches that you get to work with and the resources available. What do you wish you knew coming out back then that probably you'd know now if you were able to have these resources available?
Oh, man. Well, John's great. He's definitely on the front edge of all that stuff. And you're absolutely right. He's got his kind of fingerprints on all those guys' releases. And there's a number of guys in the space that are very, very good at that. I think, you know, I'm jealous of what the guys have available now as far as the 3D biomechanics sequencing to see exactly the mechanics of how, where they're maybe not as efficient in their movement, where they could generate more force, things that were, you know, science fiction when I was playing, you know, people just making stuff up like, yeah, it looks like you're leaning a little to the left. Well, now, you know, they can hook you up and they can tell you exactly what you're doing in real time. So that part of it is pretty fascinating and pretty awesome. And it really just raises the level of the play at the position across the board. And it's kind of leaking into lower levels of football too. So you start to see, you know, guys come into the league more ready to play. You see younger players, better developed, all those types of things, better for the game. And so that's probably where I would jump into things that I wish I would have had available when I was playing. I know personally I changed my throwing motion a handful of times as a pro. You know, I definitely wouldn't recommend that. I know exactly how much work it goes into doing those types of things. And you know, everybody's trying to get better and suck the absolute marrow out of that career. And I have a lot of value for guys who go in there and try to become the absolute best player that they can be.
Well, and you're so right about the technology and the visualization of it, because you end up probably going to a pro organization like you did, and well, if the guy tells me I need to change my throwing motion, I guess I need to change my throwing motion. But being able to see why and what you're trying to accomplish is far different than just saying, okay, if that's what you say, I guess that's what I'll do.
Yeah, yes, and I would add that nowadays they have the quantitative ways to measure the improvements. So whether it's spin rate, whether it's velocity, whether it's arm speed, whether it's torque and force from the ground, there are just so many ways that, you know, were not non-existent when I was playing. It was say like, hey, you know, it looks like you're winding up, or hey, you know, let's not do this with the ball when you bring it back, where now it's all of a sudden there's kind of established principles, and certainly people can vary a little bit. You know, I was always a guy who has never really looked the part as far as over the top, you know, 6'5" pocket passer. I was, you know, under 6'2", 3/4 release, kind of long, you know, nothing you would draw up in a factory as far as ideal throwing motion. But I played around with it enough to know that I could kind of change arm angles and move around with it and be coachable, I think certainly helped. But man, it would have been nice to be able to say, hey, this is the most efficient way for you to throw the ball consistently, well, then I would have been all in.
Well, you and I have that in common, both under 6'5". I never looked the part either. JT, great stuff, man. Great stuff. Thank you very much for this conversation. I look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, Karen, have a good one.